This is When Spirit Calls, and you on your journey are in the right place. This show is about magic, miracles, and meaning shared through stories, interviews, and channeled messages. We have so much to share about who you are and your divine mission here on the earth. Let's get to it. When Spirit Calls is right now.
I'm so happy to introduce you to today's guest, the energizing David Tigros. David is a third-generation seer, connecting with Source, all that is, sharing messages of insight and guidance for women who are stepping out from the shadows and into their light. In essence, David embodies the sacred masculine in collaboration and support of the divine feminine, working together to bring balance, direction, and meaning back to life. 40 years of study and training with revered masters in sacred spaces and temples in Japan, Thailand, and Cambodia have nurtured his abilities and enhanced his skills in accessing, interpreting, and sharing knowledge known by our higher self and beyond. As a soul family channel, David brings to light fascinating links between experiences and relationships interwoven across lifetimes, generations, and dimensional realities, answering questions such as, why am I here? Why is life happening this way? Why me? Why now? And what's next? Stay tuned. You are in for a treat. Oh my goodness, I'm so happy to be back with you all again for When Spirit Calls. And today you've learned about our guest a little bit already. We have David here. Hi, David.
Hello. So wonderful to be with you again after quite a few years, right?
Oh my gosh, it has been quite a few years. And so for you listening out there, David and I met quite a number of years ago. In fact, it was almost a decade ago, I think.
Wasn't it? In your basement, yeah.
Oh my gosh, like a long time ago. And you know, David actually reminded me that I had told him that something big was coming and that he was going to be helping massive people. And I had forgotten I told him that. And now he is doing all these incredible things. And now he's here on my podcast to share all of that with us. So I can't wait, David. Oh my gosh.
This is what we call alignment, right?
Isn't it beautiful? I just love it so much. And I love that we found our way to each other again this fall. Meaning at an event that we were both happened to be speaking at and facilitating.
Synchronicity, so, yes.
It is. The world is always conspiring in our favor. So let's talk about this journey of yours and what you've been through since, you know, years ago, last time we had connected. I would love to just tune in and let's have a conversation about what has happened in your life. How did spirit call to you and lead you into this incredible path that you're in? So I'm going to let you take it away.
Oh, the concept of when spirit called to me goes back actually to childhood for me. But spirit was calling me through my mom and my grandmother, which is kind of cool. So my grandmother and my mother had gifts of awareness and insight, whatever language we would use to call them right now. And I remember my grandmother way back when. I was born in the 60s, so this was probably in the late 60s and early 70s when I would go and visit my grandmother. Well, I did that a lot. And she would read tea leaves for people and the whole protocol, right? Drink the tea, turn over the cup, turn it three times, hand it back, and she'd read the leaves. And she said to me, when nobody else was around, David, I don't need the leaves. It's like, oh, okay. But it was an easy way for her to, it was the way that she could get people to be at ease with the work, with the receiving, right? Because there were things in place, right? So I grew up in a family with my mom and my grandmother where my grandmother, for example, at one time said, oh, Aunt so-and-so came to visit last night. By the way, she's passed away. And she said, hey, there was no pain. You were right. I'm good. And then, of course, the calls would come into the family and we'd be like, yeah, we know that. We knew that. And even with an aunt of mine, she had a picture above every stair going up from the first floor to the second floor in her home. And every once in a while, we would walk over, we would go over and she would say, oh, all the pictures were turned like 5 or 10 degrees, all tilted last night. And then she would say, well, yeah, so-and-so came to visit. So I grew up in a family where this was not unusual and it was considered comfortable. It was like, yeah, that's kind of cool, right? So the when spirit calls part here, this is when it gets so amazing for me. I've been doing connected work at the level of recording connected work and compiling connected work for 40 years. So it's been quite a while of this journey.
Yeah.
And when spirit calls kind of started when I was living in Japan in the 80s, and I would call my mom from Japan, and she would answer the phone, not knowing it was me. This is before call display and all of that, right? And she would pick up the phone on Wednesday at 2 in the afternoon and say, "Hey, David, how are you doing?" And I didn't call her that much because my phone bills were expensive as my rent. So it wasn't a daily, weekly kind of thing, right? And she always knew it was me. And when I lived in Vancouver for 7 years, apart from her, I spoke with her every night. For 7 years, I would miss maybe one night a week. And I would call her at 11 o'clock in Edmonton time. And if she didn't answer right away, I knew that she'd probably either the news was finished or she went to bed early. So I'd say, "Well, call me back tomorrow." And I said, "We do have call display now. So, you know, it's me. It's not like Japan where we didn't have that." So all was good. And she joked and said, "Just let it ring a little bit longer." And I always called it my code. I'd let it ring twice. That was my code. "Call me back if you're awake. If not, call me tomorrow." And when Spirit Calls came so powerfully in 2008, when my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and it was misdiagnosed for so long. And I understand now the reasons for that at a soul level. I get the reasons for that, although at the time I did not understand it because it was so painful for her and difficult for us. And a couple of days before my mom passed, I remember sitting at her bedside. I couldn't even touch her because she was in so much pain. But I had to say to her, "We need a code. Because we need to figure out how I'm going to know it's you coming back," right? That kind of thing. And she said to me, and pardon the pun, but she said deadly seriously, "David, we don't need a code. You're going to know it's me." And that was a Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. She passed away on a Wednesday evening at 8 o'clock. So that was a couple of days prior to that. On Friday at noon, so Wednesday evening to Friday morning, however many hours that calculates out to be, we had this home on a ravine and nobody around us. And it was the end of February. It was kind of chilly, well, tundra, what I call Canada tundra at the time. And I remember having this hankering. It was 2 days, a day and a bit after she passed. I thought, "I got to go outside. I just got to go outside." So I opened the screen door, stepped out on the patio, and these wind chimes that my dad had built, tied up for the winter, as one would do, I guess, one of them was loose and was going ding, 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 ding. And I thought, "Well, there's my sign. I got it. And my grandmother, my grandfather was a conductor. My mom was a piano teacher. And she used to whistle. They could both whistle classical music. And she would whistle to the birds in the ravine and they would answer. And there was one particular bird that had this really unique whistle. Like, you wouldn't hear it much, but they would always kind of communicate. So I opened the door, heard the chimes, heard the whistle, thinking, "Oh, there we go. That's my mom." And I thought it was good. I thought, I got it. I really needed that sense of connection with her. Yeah. And then within a few breaths, I knew that we weren't done. So I came into the room. I put up, at that time, it wasn't a laptop, it was a desktop computer. So I turned on the computer, turned on the monitor, put a Word document onto the monitor, turned off the monitor so I couldn't see a thing, and I just started typing. And I was just typing away. I couldn't even tell you how long, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, I don't know. And when I finished, because I was just in this zone, I turned on the monitor, went back and started reading. And the first part was, "It's me, here's where I am, here's who I'm with, and here's what that was all about." It's like, oh, whoa. So there's where Spirit started speaking to me in the form of my mom. And then the final line was this. "Oh, and by the way, when you opened that door and heard those chimes ringing outside, that was the sign that the door is now open." And that began a journey. And that was Saturday. That was Friday at noon. I slept in her bed. She passed away in her bed. It was horrific in the experience. It was just so horrific. And I couldn't do anything. I was calling in everybody, just help her. And there was no help that was available. And I understand now. I got the soul lessons that they came a little bit later. They don't come always instantaneously, right? Yeah. However, Saturday, which was the beginning of March, March, April, May, June, July, 5 months in a row, we compiled over 180 chapters. So I would wake up in the morning, go to the computer again. I had a title in mind. I'd put the title on there, turn off the Word document or turn off the monitor and start typing. And every day, one, two, three chapters of a couple of thousand words apiece just started flowing to me and through me. So that's kind of sort of how Spirit started calling me in that very visceral, tangible, you can see it, you can hold it, you can read it kind of sort of way.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Oh, there's so much that I want to speak to around this whole experience.
Mm.
You know, first of all, I think it's so incredible, David, that you've been able to take an experience that many of us would, you know, struggle and might be traumatic for people or have a great sense of grief around them. It's amazing to see how much you've alchemized this beautiful gift of your mother into this way of expressing and sharing your light on the world. So first, I want to celebrate that.
Thank you for that, because that really touches me in the heart, because I haven't shared this story with many people, with a couple of close friends, and then like my godmother, for example, and she's like, oh, send me more, because it was months in a row, right?
Hey.
And I'm not saying that it wasn't traumatic, but I'll tell you what, and it took a while. It was a relief more than anything, and a release to have her, like even when the first day, hey, it's me, here's where I am, and here's who I'm with, and here's what it's all about. And then, by the way, that was a sign that the door is now open. When my dad came home, probably half an hour later, I said, read this. And he read it and said, that sounds like your mother. And I said, no kidding. And he said, how did that happen? I said, I don't know. But I do know that it released for me the sense of grief from the perception that she was gone.
Right.
Because she was like so present with me, so viscerally with me, right?
Yes.
And then when I got the soul level message about why I couldn't help her, because I'd been doing connected work for, at that time, 20 years. Why couldn't I help her? Because I was calling in everybody I could. Hey, angels up there and spirit guide, like everybody, just help her, please. And there I was getting nothing. And I took it personally. It's like, come on. I got more power than that. And then the lesson was made very clear to me that this was part of her soul contract, her agreements. Yeah. And I asked the question to whoever you ask, whatever language you use there, be it God or God source energy or cosmic consciousness, whatever, all that is, I said, how come my mom, such a loving person, would be required to go through such physical, difficult challenge in her transition? And the answer was this. It is because she's such a loving person, because in her agreements, soul agreements with her family, she agreed to take on all of the pain that all of her family members would have experienced in their lives, present, past, and future.
Wow.
And have that come to and through her so that she could protect us from having to experience that level of pain.
Oh, I'm just covered in goosebumps with that.
There's
so much energetic, you know, pieces to that, because, you know, so many people that I've spoken to that are going through some suffering, they're going through emotional pain, they're going through spiritual pain, physical pain, and they're like, why is this happening to me?
Why,
you know, I'm asking for help and I'm still stuck in this place and I can't get out of this place. And it's so powerful what you just said. You said, well, you realize that she had decided, she had chosen.
It was an agreement. There was an agreement in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
For her to take that pain on, for to save, you know.
To transmute it, transmute is probably the best word here.
Yes.
So that we would not experience that level of pain in our lives.
Wow.
Truly. And here's the thing about this type of work where we are receiving insights and guidance and wisdom and knowledge and all of that from the Akash and beyond. It has come to me, or become to me, something that I cannot question, because at a level of my being that I can't explain, sometimes don't even have the words to express, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. There's an inner knowing. It's like, that makes sense. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
I do sessions that go 5 hours in length sometimes. And I, seriously, I'm intelligent, but I cannot be going for 5 hours out of my head with no script. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So when we receive a flow or a stream of insight, to me, I guess maybe to take it a little the next step further, but what do we do with all of this is, I don't question, I don't doubt.
Yeah.
I reside in the trusting that this is, he's showing up for a reason. There is value to this that I perhaps I'm not able to comprehend right now. And then I also trust that in time, over time, when the time is right, clarity will come and it will make sense to me in some way.
Well, and that's the thing I think that we forget, because we think that we're supposed to get the value in real time, right? It's like, I had this experience. Why? How come I learned the lessons? Like, how come I'm not seeing the good in this? Right. And then we beat ourselves up for not being able to see the good in it. But the reality is that value sometimes shows up much later.
The first words that come to mind for me is like processing time.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I want to just unravel what processing just came to me means to me. Processing is perhaps equally in equal measure as much trying to figure it out as much as it might be for me just kind of reflecting on my experiences in life, releasing my own thoughts and beliefs, usually negative thoughts and limiting beliefs that have been taught to me by others around me or the community or the culture or the world itself or the media, whatever it happens to be. Sometimes that processing for me is gaining a level of clarity, which means releasing or learning how to release. And actually, I can't release if I can't identify them. So I have to start with the awareness and then the acknowledgement to be able to allow myself to release to certain limiting thoughts or negative thoughts and limiting beliefs to get to the clarity. Because when I'm in the way, clarity's not going to, well, actually, here's the thing. When I'm in the way, clarity's there. I just can't see it yet.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. There's such power in having conversations like this, David, because I think what I'm really seeing here is for all the people that are in pain, emotional, physical, rather than them believing they did something wrong or it's a karmic debt or they're being punished for anything, I think the opportunity is, oh, my soul needs this. It asked for this. It made a commitment for me to transmute this pain for the world, for the people I love. And if we can come at it from that perspective,
right,
then all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, I'm doing this on behalf of, and it's not so much about you, but it's about the entire collective consciousness then.
So it is about us at a soul level, but it's through extension or by extension, to me anyway, with my understanding of this work, connecting us with our soul family.
Yeah, yes.
Which is higher. Maybe it's more oversoul than high in the concept of soul family rather than just my higher self, which is individuated across lifetimes and timelines.
Of course. Yeah. And I think it just gives us permission in a way to say, okay, I'm not being punished because I'm a bad person or I did something wrong. I, on some level, my higher self.
Can I share a really quick story?
Yes.
It's in connection. It's not a reflection on that exact concept, but it's connected. So I have an experience, I've had a number of experiences in my life where family members, siblings, and close cousins, just for example here, have in the 3D level, my perception was that really hurt. Like you're just taking me to the cleaners here and like, whoa, especially after my mom passing and then my dad passing, it's like, whoa. And at the time I took everything personally and because I'm empathic and also compassionate, I was the one calling the guilt. They didn't seem to care at all about certain things, but I was holding on to all of that.
Yeah.
And then this kind of insight came to me. So sometimes I was judging myself. I was sure I was judging them, but I was judging myself more harshly. I was holding myself in blame and shame for not making things better, not making up and all that kind of stuff there. And then I realized at a soul level, like, and I'm going to go on a segue here for a story. I have a favorite teacher. I think most of us do. Maybe my favorite teacher was from elementary school, my grade 6 teacher.
Yeah.
I loved her so much that, grade 7, grade 8, grade 9, I go back and visit. We go back to see her just because she was so important to us that I honestly can't remember probably the lessons that she taught me, which were coming from a book. But she taught me compassion. She taught me connection. She taught me the value. Actually, she taught me, here's a deeper truth. She saw me.
Ah.
So she taught me, and Brené Brown's work, she taught me that it was okay to be myself in order to belong rather than trying to fit in by being someone else, right? So I so highly valued her. And yet, if I look at the concept of holding, and the words that most people will use would be forgiveness. So this is kind of tapping into that holding people in a certain level of energy here. It doesn't make sense to me to use the word forgiveness within the concept or in connection in the sentence with my favorite teacher on the planet.
Okay.
What would I have to forgive her for? I mean, I loved her so much and she taught me so much about life. Like I will never, ever forget her. I've got a picture of her on my phone even. Like she's so important to me. So because she, as my favorite teacher, is such an impactful, passionate teacher in my life, I hold her in such high esteem. Why would I then judge someone who's teaching me through lessons which I would interpret as being difficult or challenging?
Oh, yes.
Someone who, so a sibling who's taken me to the cleaners, like really after. Anyway, this happens, right? We know that oftentimes if there's an estate involved and there's siblings involved and the parents are gone and then money's involved, things are not going to be that easy. There's going to be things that are hitting the fan and like it's not a great situation for many people many times, right? And it was not good. It was not easy for us. then I realized my sisters, I'll just use the words that I've used before, my sister's fight, for lack of a better word, for money, was actually at the soul level my lesson to learn to value myself. And when I got to that depth of level, it's like, oh, I get it. So now it's, and also Dolores Cannon, love her work. There was one interview that I saw her on YouTube, and she said she made one statement, which is going to tie into the whole concept of this higher levels of connection with us. She made one statement, and she said, just, it was a message that she'd received many, many times. And she said, just please remember, don't create any new karma. So when I had a very difficult, challenging, hard couple of years going through all of this after my parents had passed away with siblings and cousins and other relatives, for example, when I realized, oh my God, I understand at a soul level what this was all about now. I have this sense within me. I can't explain it. I can't judge it. I can't judge it. I can't qualify it. I can't make anyone believe the way that I see it. But the thing is this, I have this sense that when my sister and I are no longer in physical form, when we're back up in wherever that happens to be, if up is the direction that we go in, for example, we are going to throw our arms around each other and love each other and hold each other and say, oh, we got it. We got it.
Figured it out.
We figured it out. And we didn't have to go back and try to make it better because we got the lesson. So this is the concept of soul lessons. Sometimes, actually, maybe more often than not, they come wrapped up in packages that are really difficult to deal with and really difficult to face. And on the surface, we don't see them as gifts, but at a soul level, from that level of awareness to me. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to see everything as a gift every time when it's whacking you upside the head and taking you down, right? It doesn't mean that at all.
Yeah.
But over time, with a little bit of reflection and introspection, when I don't look at that one over there that hurt me, and I don't look at them over there that did that to me per se, right? Holding blame and shame and all kind of stuff there, none of that. But when I look at myself and say, wow, how am I stronger or wiser or more insightful because of that? And then kind of four steps in a process. Number one, hold on to that which is deep and dark and heavy. Number two, turn the hand over, put like a Bagua mirror on the back of your hand and say, I'm just doing self-reflection here. What did this mean for me potentially at a higher level of my being?
Yeah.
And when I can get an awareness of what that might be, it doesn't mean I'm going to get the answer. Like you said, it doesn't come right away. But when I have an insight into, that's maybe what that's all about here. And maybe sometimes the clearing out of space and people in your life is to make room for that which is at a higher level of vibration. I get it. So then the third step of four is to see the value, sense into the value. That actually has great value because oftentimes, think about people who have horrific accidents who say coming through it, like maybe however long it takes to get back to health and well-being, but they say greatest gift ever, right? Sometimes. So the third step of four is to see, perceive, hold on to the value. But that to me at a soul level does not mean that the work is complete and the cords have been released. To me, the energetic cords of connection are released when you can hold gratitude for the experience and say, I understand. I hold gratitude. Thank you for the gift that you offered me, even though, man, that was really hard. I get it now.
It hurts, yeah.
It really hurt and it was really deep and it was really dark and it was really difficult. But I understand the lesson. I understand the value. I get it. And now I hold gratitude for that. Going back to my teacher, how could I hold any anger against someone who's gifted me the most powerful lesson that maybe at the highest possible level here, I had an agreement with them to come back and actually work that through?
Wow.
Right?
I love this conversation because it helps us to really start to see the truth of things. And I think it's hard to do when we're in it, like you said, you know, when we're
not going to happen.
You know, it's like, okay, we just got to be in that space, honor the feelings, right? And eventually we get out of our way, as you mentioned. So
sometimes using the vehicle or vehicle metaphor, rather than stepping on the gas of my anger or stepping on the gas of my blame or my whatever happens to be I'm holding on to, rather than pumping on the brakes and trying to push it away, how about we just go neutral? And that neutral state of the middle there is like, okay, I don't know what it is right now. I have no idea where this is going right now. But I also realize that I myself, that's really hard because I'm talking 3D here. So the me that I know doesn't have all the answers right now. But the we, which is me connected to the higher self, the I don't have the answers right now. But we, in connection with my higher self, it'll come to light. It will come to light. I trust that. And therefore, I'm just going to go neutral for a while here, especially when things feel deep and dark and difficult and kind of heavy. It's not going to serve me to try to figure it out.
Right. And then that's what I call coasting.
Yes, exactly.
When we can just be in the coasting phase where it's like, okay, I don't need to resist what I'm feeling. I don't need to have it all figured out. I can just be in coasting phase. I love that.
Well, can I add to that then too? Because from my perspective, mind you, I've been receiving like insights and information for, I've got, this is kind of crazy. I have 1,500 hours of audio and video of me on stages that I've never seen the light of day because that's something else. That's soulless to me, holding on to the fear of being seen, that whole thing there. So in the coasting experience, what I would add to that is putting myself maybe in the passenger seat to the receiving, allowing myself to receive.
Yes.
So I'm coasting. So yeah, I'm in the driver's seat still, but I've also kind of got me over there that is in the receiving energy of, I don't know what it is right now, but if you got any insights for me, anybody up there, I'm willing to receive.
Yeah.
I'm open. Yeah.
I talk about the willingness to receive all the time because it's a big issue for
it's everything.
Yes, right? If we can't receive, you know, then we're giving and giving, feeling depleted. Then we're giving and giving, feeling like we're not getting anything back. We've got to be willing to receive, right?
And that ties into, of course, self-worth and all of that, right? So that's a whole another set of chapters will be there.
Yes, it is. Wow. So, David, you went through this experience. You've written all these books. You know, what has been kind of the big things, the big messages that you learned? I mean, you've already shared a bit.
I love this.
But has there been any key things that you're just like, I need to share this with the world? These are the things that people need to know.
I'm going to start in general and then go into more detail and more specific. So in general, so I've done work. I would call myself a seer rather than a channeler, but that's because I have certain resistance to the concept of what it means to be a channeler, only because I've seen other people being judged for doing that. And seer just seems a little bit more comfortable. And also I have four threads of information. I've got the visual, I got the auditory, I got the emotion, and I got the meaning. So I got the meaning is very important to me because many people who can see and hear and feel and all that, but don't know the meaning, it's like, well, I got to interpret that on my own one, just can't you give me the meaning? So from the meaning component, that's how I would use the term seer. So I've done my work, individual and group sessions now for 40 years in a number of countries. Well, Canada, the US, that's kind of an obvious given for me, but also in Japan, in Korea, I'm not going to get politically incorrect here. So let's just say in China, in Vietnam, my partner's from Vietnam, right? So in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in Thailand, in Indonesia, Malaysia, in India, into the Middle East. So I've been doing work in quite a few countries for quite a few years. And what is astounding to me is, it's quite obvious. I realize that now. So it's pretty obvious. There are patterns of certain thoughts and beliefs that we're holding on to. It doesn't matter what our culture is, who our the family is that we grew up in, born to us or adopted by us, for example, in the community, there are certain patterns that I've recognized, that I've identified. And some of the deep underlying ones are going to be self-worth and I'm not enough and all of that. I totally get that. And the fear of being seen, I understand that. Fear of judgment is a big one. I've held that forever, fear of judgment. But then the deeper level of fear of judgment for me is if you judge me, I have a strong belief that you're going to reject me. So it's actually rejection that comes from the judgment that is what I'm really kind of afraid of, right? Which is why I have 1,500 hours of audio and video that I've never seen the light of day beyond the studio because I'm afraid, like, oh, you're going to judge me, all that kind of stuff.
I get it.
So what I'm fascinated by is identifying the patterns and the patterns that show up for individuals and groups across countries and across continents and throughout cultures. That to me is fascinating, which is why the whole concept of soul family really came into my awareness. Is like, what if we are all soul family and we're all kind of sort of working on this in our own sort of unique ways? And therefore, if we can share stories together about our experiences with some directional, okay, here's what that is, we're going to really support one another individually, of course, collectively as a group on the planet and with our soul family as well.
Wow. Right?
Can I give you a really specific one? I couldn't believe it when it came to light for me. So really quickly, when I was in elementary school, probably 8, 9, 10 years old, walking 4 or 5 blocks to go to school, as we did in the 60s, there was a woman who had a home or house that was bordering on the lane that we had to go down to get to the school. And she had this big, dark stained, brown stained fence. And there was one day when somebody wrote David, my name, in yellow wax crayon all over her fence. And I was the only David that she knew in the hall, in the community or in the block. So she went to my mom and dad and accused me of doing that. And I didn't do it. Then my mom and dad said, did you do it? It's like, no, I didn't. I didn't. So it was pretty easy for me to say no. But the thing is, ultimately, they made me clean that fence, which I interpreted. So this is the way that humans interpret things, especially little kids. I interpreted that as, you don't believe me.
Yeah.
It was probably easier just to keep the peace and clean the fence. And my dad, I mean, he had a company that was doing that, so it was pretty easy to do. But to keep the peace, I cleaned the fence, crying the whole time I was doing it because I know that I didn't do that. However, the internal belief of you don't believe me. Then grade 7, in a language arts class, the direction was to write a poem. So I was already connected to all that is receiving a whole lot of insights. And my mom, we had a library in the house. She was well-read. Vocabulary was something we talked about, and she taught. So I put together this poem that I thought was brilliant. And I remember sitting at the dining room table writing out this poem, putting it together, getting all the pictures. It's like, there's the words. I got the words. And I remember going with my mom to the drugstore to get this blue vellum, whatever. And we typed it out, right? In typewriter days, right? With the whiteout tape if you do actually make a mistake. So I typed it to make it perfect and handed it into the teacher because I was so proud of my work. And she called my mom, and the response that she said to my mom was, there is no way that a child in grade 7 could write this. You must have written this. He gets a 0. And my mom, what could she say? Right? She could defend me, which she did, but the bottom line was my teacher didn't believe me. And that was the first connection where I was receiving intuitive insights. I was creating something with them, and yet I was presenting it so proud of my work, and the teacher didn't believe that it was mine. That was huge. And then lo and behold, a couple of years ago, I went to Asia just after COVID when we could travel. And I had some COVID belly going on there as well. So I said to a friend of mine one day, I said, okay, I'm going to go to Asia for 2 months, 3 months. When I come back, you'll be able to get your arms around me. With a bit of humor saying, and I'm going to lose my COVID belly, right? Because I was a little, it made sense to say that. And her response to me was, yeah, we'll see. Flippantly. And so I took that as, here's where it's so crazy when the patterns start showing up. I didn't realize how I reacted, how I interpreted that, but that was another instance of, you don't believe me.
Yes.
Right? So it showed up to me, it showed up for me as an adult in ways that in the moment at the time, it was just a flippant response and I took it personally and it shut me down.
Wow.
So much so that when I was traveling to Asia, her friends got a whole lot of pictures. She got nothing.
Yeah.
Because then I became a kid, right? I became a kid.
Right.
Yeah. Like a child is like who's all defensive and angry and feeling hurt.
Yes. Yes.
And at that time I was 60. Like, what?
This is a really powerful conversation because, you know, how we respond to that particular situation is actually not usually about that particular situation. That's what I'm hearing you say, right?
Not at all. But I wasn't aware of that. And it was only because I was in class. I was in classrooms teaching. And all of a sudden, the pieces started coming together in my mind's eye. It's like, I get it. Because at the time, even for the time I was in Asia for a couple of months and came back, I didn't see any of that until I started talking about it, right. Until I started processing what that was. And then I could expand my awareness to what might that be, kind of going neutral, yeah. Coasting a little bit there, what might that be? And then boom, 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 these pictures came back. It's like, oh, that's what it is.
You know, I love this so much because I recently had this happen to me. I was really triggered because I was told that I wasn't going to be welcome into a space to do readings anymore, which was like depths of rejection. I didn't know what I did wrong. They've not communicated what I did wrong. So I have no idea. So of course my wheels start going and I go into this deep place of despair. But what I recognize is the pattern of rejection for me. So I recognize, I know the universe is aligning me with places that are of my highest good. I know there's a reason. I do understand that. And what was so profound, however, was that I looked back at all these moments of rejection and not just in this lifetime, but other lifetimes.
Exactly.
And so then all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, like this is such a theme for me. And I'm so afraid of rejection. It hurts so much because it's someone saying you don't belong here.
That's right. well, you don't belong. You're not good enough. Whatever it happens to be, because we can interpret that in so many different facets of the mirror ball, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this topic.
I love that you share that it goes across lifetimes as well, because I have a story that, if we got the time, I got a story to share with you that rocked my world when it came to light.
Okay. I want to hear it. So I do want to just remind our audience, you know, what David really brought to the surface is notice the patterns. So I think that's one of the big things, the big lessons that you wanted to bring to the surface, and what you was like, there's patterns here. So if we can find the patterns, oftentimes we can find the answers to our healing journey.
Let's put a step in between. When we are aware of the patterns and we can acknowledge what they are, we open the door into the receiving of what that might be. And sometimes we will get the answers, sometimes quickly, sometimes over time. Sometimes we got to go see a therapist who's trained in this to get us there.
Yeah.
We can't do it on our own, right?
Yes, yes. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay, tell us the story.
So this is kind of, that's so real for me. And here's the thing. Now that I have the awareness of this, so awareness to me comes first, then the acknowledgement. You can't acknowledge something if you're not aware of it. So the awareness came, and then the acknowledgement, and then it was like, oh, I get it. So my life, I've been a teacher for 40 years in school systems and corporate, like I've been teaching professionally, and I guess that's the best word you can use. I've been teaching in a professional environment for 40 years at universities and in corporations and school boards and all of that. And always, when you're hired to teach a course, to develop a course, to teach a course, to train a course, and to facilitate all of that, my experience has been that the companies, the organizations who hire you, typically you're going to make majority, from my experience, 75% or more of the money that they're charging for you goes into their pocket, and they pay you whatever that happens to be there. And I've always been okay with that, because I was able to justify, and even for friends and people that I know in business who said, hey, can you build me out a presentation for PowerPoint because I'm doing this presentation for London? It's like, well, sure. But I could never ask for payment for that, because to me, I would justify it by saying, there we go. I can start weaving the pieces together here. I would never be comfortable asking for payment, and I never would ask for payment, because if I would put together, take me 50 hours to put together a PowerPoint presentation way before AI could be doing it much faster, for example. Yes. If I put the presentation together and it was very successful for them, let's say it would be successful because I've got a master's in education here. Like I've been doing education for a long time. So it's not going to be good. However, the fear that someone might judge me if it's not what they're looking for, not exactly what they want, if they had paid me for that, I would feel like I kind of ripped them off, right? This is not a good thing. Yeah. So doing it for free was always the way to just give it away. It was my way of validating my own worth, my vain attempt at validating my own worth. But here's the thing. When the insight came to me, because I've got businesses now, I'm in maybe as many countries as you are. I'm in 4 or 5 countries on the ground, and 8 or 9 other ones kind of, you know, virtually right now, coming on the ground soon. However, it's a challenge for me. It's much easier for me to promote you and set your fees and ask for fees for you than it would be for myself, right? Like, yeah. Doing it for myself is not going to work very comfortably.
Yeah.
And there was one insight that came to me, and here we'll get to the nugget here, because I storytell and go on tangents a little bit here. So bringing it back home. There was one insight that came to me, and it was a question that was posed to me. And the question was this: do you remember being sold into slavery? And when the question came, I thought, let me just search around up in there. No, I don't remember that. But then I got a little bit deeper. It's like, oh, just a second here. I do have memories of other people determining my value, determining my worth, with me on the platform, something around my neck, something around the ankles. They were barking out the cost or the fee that someone would have to pay for me. They were taking all the money, and I was sold off. So all of that, a couple of times, times being lifetimes. And then it came to me, oh, that's why setting my own price or setting my own fee. No, I've made a connection with money being money. I'm not saying money is slavery, but money gives other people control over me.
Yeah.
Right? So when I put that together, it was astounding. And there's one woman that I've worked with for a decade, and she's, well, like a PR person. She does the contracts and she puts it all together, and she tells me where to go and what to do. And I build the course and do the whole thing, and they take 75%. I'm thinking that's not a normal speaker's bureau kind of thing. However, then I realized, oh, wow. When I saw the image, it was like, you got to be kidding, man. I saw the image in my mind as clear as day that she was one of the guys, big, muscled, all tatted up guys in whatever country that I was being auctioned off in, who was telling people what I was worth and taking the money for me. It's like, what do you mean? So what if, how could I prove this? I can't prove anything, but what if this woman that I've been working with for 10 years, who's promoting me, but keeping so low at 60, 70, sometimes 80% of what I'm generating through my work, she's keeping it all. What if, just what if she is that soul level where she was that person way back when, different gender, different body, totally air, who was putting me up on the block and determining my value and my price, keeping all the money for me, and I had no control and I couldn't break free. And what if I just bought into that over time? It's like, well, I don't know what to do, so I'll just acquiesce and say, okay. Like, it's not okay, but say, well, what can I do? And kind of sort of give up, right? What if we have an agreement now where she came back in that form and I came back in this form, and now she's the woman who's promoting me, still keeping a lot of the money here, but what if the sole lesson is for me, once again, like my sister, to value myself? So there we go. There's a pattern that I hadn't even put together before, but the lesson to learn to value myself. It's like, oh. And then the question becomes, okay, what do I do with that now?
Right?
Oh, because when we have the awareness, okay, good, we're out of the gates, we're on the track, now what?
Now what? That is the question. And I'm actually moving through a lot of my value limiting beliefs as well right now. So I love that you're compelled to share that story, because I think as light workers, as people who are stepping in to this healing role in the world,
yes,
you know, we have so many insecurities and so many vulnerabilities because of the persecution, because of the condemnation over many, many, many years. And so we question our value. Many of us have also been nuns and, you know, fall into that being in service category, right?
And yes, I've got 14 lifetimes as a monk that I remember.
Yeah.
I can tell you the countries, I can tell you the age, I can tell you everything. I can tell you the building. I've obviously lived them, but I've relived them. I know them.
Yes.
But there's a word that you used, and I can't remember it right now, but I want to go back and reflect on that when it comes to the society or the culture or the world, the state of the world as it is right now. What if the awareness of a soul lesson of the fear of being seen, fear of being judged, fear of being rejected and all of that. But when we, here's the thing, I've been doing the work for so many years and I have so much content. I've got hard drives filled with stuff. That's, like I said, never, like, hence my social media is like, that's kind of, there's not a whole lot there, man, Donald, because I've been holding, but that's also soul lesson. It's like, no, we need to get it out. We need to get this out. But what if the deeper level here is not just the awareness of the fact of why we're holding back and why we're afraid of being seen and why we're afraid of the judgment and why we're afraid of rejection or whatever it happens to be. But what if the soul lesson is when we get it and say, okay, I get it. I understand you. I'm not appreciative necessarily of the pain that I had to go through and the challenges that I felt going through this, but I get it. And therefore I can hold gratitude for that. And with that simple act of gratitude, I could, like candy floss in your hand or candy floss in your mouth, it can dissolve the connections to that. So I don't need to repeat the patterns.
Yes.
It's just I don't have to, well, I might, but I don't have to go to a therapist to figure out why. Once I get the why and I see the connections across lifetimes and timelines, once I've got the awareness of the connections of the soul lessons, okay, now I might take a little bit of time to process, sure, but once I've got it, candy floss in the mouth, dissolved, we're good. And then what it means is getting in the car, getting back in the vehicle, because we are that vehicle, and never looking back in the rearview mirror, taking the rearview mirror out of the vehicle, so all you do is looking forward.
Right? You know, this sounds like the protocol that Linda Howe teaches, and Linda Howe is a practitioner of Akashics, you must know her.
Yes.
Is awareness, acceptance, appreciation, and appropriate action.
There we go.
Yes. Essentially what you're saying here, like, these are the steps as we continue to see all this shit stuff come to the surface. You know, if we go through those steps, we alchemize that energy, we move forward in a way that allows us to be really truly on our divine path and not get pulled into the undercurrent of the fear or the worry or the stress of the world.
Yes, and you've used the words shit and alchemy. So what if the shit and the heavy and the difficult stuff there actually we see as being diamonds and gold?
Yes.
Because it's got value.
It's got value. Right? Yeah.
There's value there. And so once we can transmute whatever it happens to be, the deep and the dark and the difficult and the heavy, by reflecting on the value, then we can hold the gratitude. If I'm in gratitude, there, I can't hold on to fear. I can't hold on to blame. I can't hold on to shame. I can't hold on to anything that doesn't feel good, that weighs you down on the vibrational scale there. If I'm in gratitude, it doesn't exist.
Yes, it doesn't exist. Love it.
So what it means to me is finding the patterns, figuring out, and just seeing the patterns initially, then being open to receiving what might this be, and with some guidance. I mean, you offer guidance. I offer guidance. There are many on the planet who are offering guidance into insight and the wisdom and the gifts and the knowledge of what that means for us. And then with a little bit of help, a little bit of coaching, a little bit of counseling, whatever you want to call it. Some people maybe at the end of the spectrum, a little bit of therapy.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Yeah. So that they don't carry. Bit of a tangent again, but here's why I found most of the women that I'm working with don't move forward faster, because they have created an identity around the pain. Mm. They've connected their identity to the pain.
Yeah.
And therefore stepping into the unknown, which is that coasting in the middle there, stepping into the unknown is not a great place to be, because we don't know what's coming next. So if we have built an identity around who we are based on our pain or the challenges or the difficulties in our life, and we can't, there's no way that we can get, because the awareness is around the what isness, not about the why.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So David, we're coming to a close here, and I know there's so much more that we can be going off on, but what's one more thing that you want people to know that's important about their experience here as human beings in this three-dimensional world? Is there a quote? Is there something profound that you just love to share?
I don't know if it's profound. Well, it's profound to me. I don't know if it will be profound for others. I have been so afraid of judgment my whole life. And it also comes from being a gay kid who knew when you're 6 and 7 that you don't fit in but don't know why. That you don't belong, but don't know why. It takes to becoming an adult. It's like, oh, that's what that is. But I've been told that this is wrong, right? So it's the not fitting in part, not fitting in and not belonging part there. So the fear of judgment part. What I've come to realize, and actually realizing is not enough. What I've come to be aware of and to acknowledge and to accept, yes, and then to allow myself to actually go there, is the truth, the deeper truth, that I am judging myself more harshly and seriously than the fear of what other people judging me. Mm. So the overarching soul level lesson for me has been, whenever I feel like I'm judging myself, and sometimes I won't even realize what I'm doing, but if I'm questioning myself or doubting myself or judging others, the judgment that I hold for others is based on the fact that it's probably a reflection, like shadow work, of the judgment of me inside anyway.
Absolutely.
So when I came to the understanding years ago that I'm the one who's, well, here we go. Pardon the language here, but I'll just go there for a second here. So I'm born in the year of the ox, 1961. So that's my Asian horoscope. So it's like having an ox cart, an ox that's pulling the cart, and it's kind of hard work. It's like, man, we're going through some deep and dark and difficult stuff here. But imagine, I'll just use the words because I can't try to be politically correct right now. So imagine that the ox is shitting on the ground, but goes into the cart. So whatever's coming out of the ox goes into the cart. So it's deep and dark and difficult and heavy because the ox is pulling the cart full of its own shit. Sorry, but you know, kind of, sort of.
Great analogy.
But also because I'm an ox. And so when I'm judging myself, when I'm doubting myself, when I have in the past judged myself, doubted myself, questioned myself, and then maybe when it's come out in judgment or doubt or something else about other people, then I realize that I'm just filling up my own cart of my own bullshit, which is kind of sort of what it is, the bullshit beliefs that are not mine. They're not a reflection of my higher self in connection with all that I am and all that is. And so when I can recognize, whoa, that cart is full of my own stuff here, I just got to clear some of that out. And the way to clear, and sometimes it doesn't have to be hard work for me. All it has to be awareness, acknowledgement, acceptance on moving forward, finding the, okay, I see it for what it is now. And therefore, I can let it go. And I grew up in Zen, not didn't grow up in, but I actually, metaphorically speaking, as an adult, grew up in Zen temples in Japan. And a Zen master would say, hold a cup in your hand. Okay, put it down. So your hand is empty. Now put the cup down. It's like, I can't put the cup down because I'm not holding onto the cup. And he said, exactly. You can't let go of something you're not holding on to.
Mm.
Right? So if I realize that the cart, the ox cart, and the bullshit beliefs and thoughts and emotions, not emotions, because emotions are not bullshit, they're real. But the bullshit beliefs and thoughts and beliefs that are in that cart are my own. When I can come to the awareness of that and acknowledge that and acceptance of that, and I can say, okay, I understand that. I'm able to let that go.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes catching myself when I get caught up in trying in the old 3D stuff of forgetting who I am.
Yes, I love that.
Forgetting who I am.
Thank you for that analogy. And here's to
live for the language.
Here, oh, hey, we're good here. And, you know, here is to remembering who we are, because that's ultimately what we're after, to remember
it is.
Who we are. So, David, what have you got in store for our people, our listeners? If they felt resonant with you and they feel compelled to reach out to you, how can they do that? What does that look like?
I love that you just used the word remembering, because my sacred journeys, I take women on sacred journeys into Asia. Cambodia is my new favorite place. Thailand was for decades and more. Cambodia is my new favorite because there's a temple there that is a combination of the sacred masculine, divine feminine. It's the most amazing place. And my journeys I call a journey of remembering and reconnecting, which means remembering all who we are and reconnecting with all that is, right?
Yeah.
On the higher scale there. So I'm compiling. It's a never-ending, ever-evolving document. It's a PDF, but it's remarkable to me where I'm taking all of the work that I'm doing in whatever countries I happen to be in with the individuals that I'm working with, and I'm identifying very simple questions that we can ask ourselves. The questions themselves seem rather simple. It's not always easy to get to the answer. Actually, maybe it's not always easy to look at what we're getting as the answers and the insights here. But I'm building, and I will share where it is right now in the evolution of this document here, a document that helps us to assess in what areas of our life and in what ways, how our soul lessons showing up for us that we're not even aware of.
Beautiful. I love it.
We don't see them. We can't see them because we're in it, right? We're in the cool
blind spots, right? It's like I can't read my palm if my hand is right there, right? It's just
yes
for me. So this is a series of
it's a series of statements and questions. And they're very, very simple. I mean, they're so simple. You think, oh, that should be pretty obvious. And what we do is, okay, basically what's resonating, and then we look at the scale from 1 to 10. 1 being, no, that's not me. That doesn't make sense. To 10 is like, busted on that one, right?
Okay.
And then we assess, okay, well, so when we're looking at the 7, 8, 9 kind of vibrational response at a 7, 8, 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10, it's like, okay, if we don't know what's going on, or we don't know why something is happening or why it's showing up here now, then I've got hundreds of snapshots, I call them snapshots, snapshot insights to help us now work through the process to figure out what does that mean for us? What is that perhaps at a soul level? Not saying it's always soul level for everybody, and not saying that we have all the answers, because we don't, because I can guide you, but the answers will be unique to you.
Yeah.
However, so the initial assessment is, what's going on? Where are things there? And then the follow-up stages are, oh, I want to check that out. I want to check that out. I want to check that out. And these are channeled insights that give us the insight into, from a soul level, from our higher self, what this is.
Brilliant. So that's the gift. And that will be in the show notes, folks. So for those of you listening, that gift will be in the show notes. You'll be able to
connect
with that and connect with David from there. David, oh my gosh, you're such a ball of energy and light. I'm so grateful that we were able to spend this time together. I can't wait to spend more time with you. We got to talk about your retreat and things that you're doing. And I am really looking forward to what's maybe in store for the two of us too. I have a feeling that something.
At the event in October, we didn't have enough time to get our arms around each other and sit and talk to each other. I want that. I don't want to say I want, because that's kind of tofu language and deep. I value that time with you, because we will have conversations. We will explore facets of the mirror ball, the way that I see a lot of things in the world that won't come to light, that will come to light because we are in connection.
That's it. Oh, can't wait. Okay. We're going to do a little follow-up, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in to another episode of When Spirit Calls. And I cannot wait for you to join us when we are back again in a couple of weeks. So until then, take care. Lots of love. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Bye.
So happy you could join us today. And we hope that you found comfort and inspiration with wherever you are at right now. If you feel you received a gift in today's message, please pass that gift along to a loved one by sharing this episode with them. To continue this conversation, please join me at rosehope.ca. And when you do, be sure to access your free gift by signing up for the When Spirit Calls newsletter. I'm looking forward to connecting with you again soon.